Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Poverty, foreclosure, and uninsurance on the rise. Avert your eyes from the Dow and the NASDAQ and check out these uncommonly bad economic indicators. According to census figures just released, the poverty rate for 18 to 64s, that's basically all adults who are not senior citizens, highest level since the 1960s, since before the Great Society programs of Lyndon Johnson. Plus, 4 million more Americans lost health insurance last year alone. That means 50 million Americans are uninsured for the first time. The Wall Street Journal headline today calls it a lost decade for family income. And even though it's the Wall Street Journal, it acknowledges that the stimulus bill, yes, the stimulus bill, kept millions of people afloat in 2009. Let's talk about all of this with Gretchen Morgenson, business writer for The New York Times, and David Jones, the CEO of the Community Service Society of New York, which is a think tank and advocacy group around poverty issues. David Jones, Gretchen Morgenson, welcome back to WNYC.
How are you, Brian?
Yeah. Thanks, Brian.
And listeners, we want to invite calls from anyone who feels that you have fallen below the poverty line for the first time in the last year. And I realize it's a little bit subjective. And I realize that it's also sensitive to talk about and may not even be easy for our listeners to listen to. But I think it's important to put some human voices on those abstract statistics that I just read, even to help politics and society react genuinely to them. So if you're willing to call, if you think you have dropped into poverty in the last year, please do call us and tell us how that happened for you, what you're doing to make ends meet, any stimulus programs helping you out, and what else you think you need from government or anyone. 212-433-WNYC. Again, if you think that you have fallen into poverty technically for the first time in the last year, 212-433-9692, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And David, what do the new stats tell us about overall poverty? I'm seeing highest poverty rate in 15 years at more than 14% of all Americans. And that stat that I cited, that for 18 to 64-year-olds, which is such a wide swath of age, it's at its highest level since the 1960s.
I mean, it's consistent with what we're seeing, obviously, in the city of New York. I think there was another statistic that was not focused on, that when you turn to Latinos in poverty, that's jumped extraordinarily. Now we have more than 25% of Latinos who are now considered below the poverty line.
Right about equal with African Americans. They had been less in poverty?
Yes, and they were working more. But that turns into more than 12 million Latinos who, in that number of 44 million below the poverty line, 12 million are Latino and 10 million are African American. That has some special impact on a place like New York, where we have such high concentrations of both groups.
Indeed. And what about that stat by age, that 18 to 64, highest poverty rate since the 1960s, that's a poverty rate of 13%. Why would that be even more stark than, let's say, for senior citizens?
Well, I think it has implications for families and children growing up in poverty. Obviously, when you get to the beyond 65, you're not necessarily raising families. But now we're seeing a switch, particularly among younger workers who either never connect with the workforce or, in fact, and have to raise families, or either as single parents or as intact families. And that raising a child in poverty has all sorts of long-term implications. Things we used to think of more as the developing and developing world, where you have generation after generation mired in chronic poverty.
And sure enough, as you say, families with children, another version of the stats shows that the rate of increase was the fastest for children than of any group in terms of who went into poverty in the last year. By the way, you mentioned New York compared to the nation. If more than 14% of Americans are now in poverty overall, in New York it's 15.8%. So not overwhelmingly higher, but a few points higher, right. and that's meaningful. Gretchen Morgenson, what about foreclosures?
Well, we had some very bad data this week, Brian, which indicate that it's accelerating the problem with default notices, foreclosures, et cetera. In fact, the homes in the United States lost to foreclosure is up 25% on the year from data in August. So we are really looking at an acceleration here. And to some degree, that's to be expected because some of the modification programs that the government tried to put in place did have a sort of temporary hiatus about foreclosures. But that's really gone by the boards, I think, and now we're starting to see the numbers ratchet up again. Of course, we do have already a lot of problems for people in some of the states that saw the biggest increases in prices of homes, where they are now underwater in their properties. It's really almost one quarter of the nation has a mortgage that is higher than the value of the property that underlies it. And unfortunately, that is a real sort of signal for further foreclosures.
Let's take a phone call. Patrick in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Patrick, we appreciate your call.
Hi. Hello. How you doing, Brian? Good day.
Good day. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm not doing too good right now. I'm under the economic weather like everybody else. Right now, I lost my business 2 years ago. I ran a delicatessen in Brooklyn. I closed that down 2 years ago. No excessive bills and no low income. Now my house is in foreclosure. I don't have to tell my kids the house is in foreclosure. Mm-hmm. They go to school every day. I don't know if they're going to come home one day, we're going to be homeless, you know? So it's like really frustrating. Right now I'm thinking about, you know, it's a change, you know? I'm trying to grasp this change and work with it the best way I can. But try as I may, I just can't seem to find a way out of this.
So David Jones from the Community Service Society, one of the reasons that we wanted you here today was knowing we would get calls from people like Patrick. What can he do? What services are out there that you could refer him to or advice that you could give him? Obviously, there's, you know, no amount of advice that's going to necessarily save a lot of people from going into foreclosure, but there are always a lot of things that people don't know about that are some kinds of options. So you heard Patrick's story.
Okay.
What would you say?
I think there are things that can be done. I don't want to oversell it. There is help that we and other organizations in the city are working on in terms of providing financial counseling to people to try to save their homes and apartments. And before this broadcast is over, I'll get a phone number that I'll be able to give you that they can start calling in. And I think that's an important thing to do. That the trouble is, of course, that so many people are falling into this position. We just finished a poll that was conducted in this July and August showing that people out of work, about 67% of the people at below the poverty line who have been out of work have been out of work between 1 and 3 years. So the numbers are beginning to bloom of large numbers of people who are chronically unemployed. And that's what's going to be a real pressure on the city of New York going forward, because we're not just merely seeing a short blip where people lose their job for a couple of weeks. They're losing them for years and more.
Patrick, you said you were a small business owner. You owned a deli, right?
Yes.
Are you looking at opening another business to try to get going again, or more to be hired by somebody?
I would love to open another business, but I'm so fearful right now, and plus financing is almost impossible to get in my financial situation. So even if I decide to go forward, you know, and try something else, you know, it's like getting financing is like ridiculous, because right now my house is in foreclosure, right. So that's no longer a collateral value I can use to get a loan to start a business.
So what are you going to do if you and your kids have to move out?
Really, you know what? I've been contemplating that for a while now, and I just don't know. To be honest with you, Brian, I don't know. I'm a single parent, and I don't know.
Mm-hmm. David, okay. One more time.
Yeah, the number
Option.
That
Go ahead.
I think he should use is 212-614-5552. We have something called the Center of Benefit and Services at Community Service Society, which will be either, if we can't help him there, we'll start to set him up with conversations with other institutions that are working specifically on the issue of trying to keep your house. You sort of have to do a sort of triage here. The first thing is try to keep you in your home, then obviously trying to find sources of potential loan capital to try to restart a business, which is not really our work, but there are other groups in the city of New York working on that.
Patrick, again, that number that David just gave. David, tell me if I got this right. 212-614-5552.
Right. And he should try that number. And if he doesn't get that number, let me give him another. If that doesn't work, it's the 212-254-8900. So if you have any difficulty, tell him you heard me on this show, and we'll make sure to get back. I'll make sure someone gets back to you.
All right,
thank
Patrick, good luck. And hang on for a second. My producer wants to ask you a question, and good luck to you and your kids.
Thank you.
And let's go to another call. Bill in East Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Brian. How are you today?
Good.
Just a little background first. I'm a white male, 43 years old, college graduate. I was a mid-level retail executive. I'm in buying and planning type area. Never been out of work, really. Actually, I've worked since I was 16 years old, but was laid off 2 years ago and, went through my unemployment, 99 weeks, all the extensions, and found myself at the end where I had to go into all of my personal savings and go through all that money and finally had to apply for public assistance, actually, this year. And that's something I never thought I would have to do in my life. So I would have never thought about that. Actually, I never thought that I would have be at that point, and here I am now today. And
may I ask what kind of public assistance?
Food stamps and even a cash benefit at the moment.
And what are you going to do to get back on your feet longer term?
First thing I think is a psychological thing, Brian, because it's not that you. It's funny because I listen to a lot of perspectives on it, and people say, "Well, why can't you just go out and get a job doing anything?" The problem, number one, is that there are a lot of great people out of work right now. It's a time where if you're a fabulous person with great skills, you'll shine above everyone else. There are just a sheer amount of people that are out there. But the next thing is you realizing that and then also realizing that you're going to have to, plug away and keep moving, or you're going to be homeless and you're not going to eat or whatever is going to happen next. So I went and I applied for a job and just actually got it last week as a working in a grocery store. Because I don't want to have to be on public assistance, but thank God it was there for me at that moment.
And one thing I know, because I talk to people who work in the food stamps office, there are so many more people eligible for food stamps than ever get it. They even do outreach where they call around to people that they have from various lists, telling them that they might be eligible for food stamps.
Right, I know. It was just, it was a big psychological hump for me to get over. I had my head hung so low that day. Not because I think it's a bad thing, because I think it's more than ever. I now realize it's mm-hmm. a very necessary thing for people. It's a safety net that was there. But I always thought, obviously, why should I have to go do it if I have money in my account to pay for myself and take care of myself? There are other people who don't have anything, and finally having to be at that moment. But I was very surprised, Brian, when I went in, at the people in the room that were applying that same day. They were all just everyday Joes that you could see in an office anywhere. So I think people are realizing they have to go do it if they have to go do it. But a really great plug, though. I have to tell you what, the people at that office were so amazing to me. I mean, I never once felt... if anything, they made me feel better about being there. They said, it's here for you. This is the right thing you're doing. You're taking care of yourself. You're being responsible. And we're glad that we can help. And I have tried to plug them on that.
Good for you, Bill. And hopefully that shout out empowers others who could use that service to go and get it. So good luck to you. And thank you very much for your call.
Thank you, Brian.
And Gretchen Morgenson, business writer for The New York Times. Some of these stats, and we hear about Bill going on public assistance and even his perspective of people on the line for food stamps just being regular Joes, where, the perception among a lot of middle class and upper people might have been that people receiving food stamps or other public assistance were somehow other. And so he was surprised to see, quote, regular Joes. But part of the reporting today on these new poverty stats is that they seem to provide evidence for the stimulus bill making a difference to keep millions of Americans afloat. Have you looked at the details of that?
Well, I'm not sure that they have a hard and fast list of what they're going to do. I mean, I've heard about some of the ideas that have been batted about. And here's my problem, Brian, with the idea of, you know, another sort of cash outlay for people. We are in such a debt hole. So many people amassed so much debt. And part of the problem, of course, is the mortgage being, you know, more than the house is worth now. But there's also a lot of consumer debt, credit card debt that was amassed during the boom, that if money goes out to people, they will simply use it to pay down debt. Now, that's not a bad thing, but it isn't really going to stimulate the economy, which I think is what people would want such an outlay to do. So we are still very much in a debt sort of spiral where we're trying to get rid of the debt we've taken on, and it just takes a very, very long time.
You know, this same discussion obviously broke out during the midst of the Great Depression with Roosevelt. There's a real danger that we're facing because more and more Americans are out of work as we don't act here for longer and longer periods of time. Many of your listeners may be as old as I am. The Bowery of the city of New York were all white males. Anecdotally, we think that was the consequence of people being out of work for too long. In the midst of the Great Depression. I'm worried that New York, I understand, I hate debt myself. I cut up my credit cards as soon as I got out of law school. But I'm worried now that we're into a phase with levels of unemployment that are so severe and people suffering, as your last caller talked about, of all different backgrounds, that we have trouble. And we did a survey just again this summer where we're reporting that about 21% of black New Yorkers, but 21% of Latinos and 14% of white New Yorkers had lost their job in that 1 year. So you're seeing the consequence of a really chronic levels of unemployment that seem to be growing despite the turnaround that people keep talking about. So I am aware, I don't like the notion of debt, but stimulus that actually gets down to working poor and moderate income Americans, we think is vital to protect the entire fabric of the nation.
And that, of course, the disagreement between the two of you on that will reflect a lot of the national debate over the coming weeks and even heightened for being in the election season. Let's take one more phone call as we talk about the new poverty stats released yesterday by the government, which show the highest poverty rate in America in 15 years. The highest poverty rate among working-age adults since the 1960s. And Linda in Englewood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Linda. Thank you so much.
Thank you, too. We are facing an intergenerational slant here, and I'm going to discuss that because I have a child who has 2 degrees, and he married a young woman who finished, got her teaching license and owed debt for getting that license, worked a year, and then was laid off due to budget cuts. So we have, for instance, 2 unemployed people with a young child and facing educational debt. And my husband, who's worked 42 years and was promised a 55 retirement by a large company, a 103-year-old company, well, they took away pension when they went out of business, and the next people said the 85-year rule holds, which means service plus age. If you have 77 of that configuration, you lose your pension. Here's a 401k, and that went boom, bust, boom, bust. So there's no fixed benefit, and the 401ks didn't perform as they promised or hoped for. So retirement and the cost of medical until you're 65, and we're a little under that, is out of reach. So we both have to hold on and can't move over for the younger generation to get the jobs of the older people. So we see this very clearly. We consider ourselves middle class. Now my son's family is struggling to just keep a house, and he paid for that house with a large down payment, not even 20% more than that, so he wasn't taking out extra loans. And the educational loan was a necessity because that gleaned a way to enter the middle class career of teaching. So this is what's facing the young people. It's an impossible road if they don't get jobs. And they have 3 degrees between them. So it's kind of a complex situation, and it needs major changes in thinking about how we handle larger companies. And I think one of the first things we should address is the corporations that promised pensions were allowed to just take on low-wage people and promise a pension, and then they just said, no, we're not doing it. It hit the airlines. It hit many different industries. Now it's across the board practically.
Sure.
But that has affected a lot of the demographics and the job dislocation.
And you tell the story really well and how it's exemplified by the generations in your own family.
Yeah.
Gretchen, anything to comment on there specifically with respect to corporate pension policies?
Well, you know, Linda is absolutely right. You know, the corporate America has gotten so many benefits from, the government, all the bank bailouts, et cetera, and their behavior on some of these issues is really suspect. And I think that pensions really need to be protected, and there has to be a complete discussion about the appropriateness of 401ks for people who are really not expert money managers. I think that we are learning the hard way that 401ks are not the answer for people who are not expert in the stock market. Job creation is absolutely crucial here for both young people, like as she described, who are very well educated, and for older people who want to continue working. But the pension situation is really a very big problem in this country, not only in the private sector, but also in the public sector.
Linda, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you, and I agree with your spokesperson, Vera. You know, we have to examine those issues, and I thank you for letting me express that.
Thank you very much. Now, before we run out of time,
sure. On
these new stats that came out yesterday, I just want to touch on the health insurance statistics. 4 million additional Americans lost health insurance last year, pushing the total above 50 million for the first time. David, were many of these working Americans whose employers dropped their plans?
Yeah, that's been a trend that we've been tracking now for almost 5 or 6 years. As employers come under the gun, one of the first things to go is the ability or willingness to provide health insurance. Or even when they are willing to provide it, the costs for a yearly buy-in by a worker is so exorbitant for a low-wage worker, they can't afford it. So that's why health care reform was so necessary. But obviously, there's a fight breaking out or has broken out as to whether we should even expand the health insurance as we've described in the new health care reform bill.
And yet, Gretchen, could this ironically be a reaction, as some people are suggesting, to the universal coverage bill that, you know, kind of is seen as allowing employers to drop people because they're going to get into government-subsidized pools in a few years?
It's possible, Brian. I'm not sure that the census would reflect that, given the recent, you know, aspect of the health care program. But I certainly think that that kind of activity has to be monitored. And I've certainly read the same stories you have in the newspapers about companies that appear to be dropping coverage and or reducing it in response to the law. So I think that's entirely possible. I just don't know if that is fact reflected in these numbers.
Serious new poverty numbers for America just out from the Census Bureau. Gretchen Morgenson is a business writer for the New York Times and columnist on Sundays, among sometimes other days. And David Jones is president and CEO of the Community Service Society, the think tank and advocacy group on New York poverty issues. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Still to come, WNYC politics blogger Ozzie Pabura and 2 winners of his Predict the Primaries contest. And yes, we will put them on the spot and ask them to predict the general election. And we'll invite you to nominate a new name for high fructose corn syrup. Stay with us.